to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay.
We are back in Gasoline Alley. I am with Ben Hanley. Ben, first off, congratulations on safely making it into the field. How does it feel on a rainy Sunday to not have to worry about qualifying again?
Yeah, it's a massive relief. You know, we can all concentrate now on putting the car back into race trim and really focus on that. So, yeah, it was a huge relief yesterday to go in and in as solidly as we did, you know.
How much of a roller coaster emotionally was it yesterday? You're in the field, you're out of the field, you're in the field, you're not sure where you're going to go. The line to withdraw your time is growing and growing and growing as the day goes. At what point yesterday were you comfortable going, all right, I'm definitely going to be in the field?
When the checkered flag dropped. when I went up to, I think as soon as I finished, it was 24, I think. So at that point, with the amount of time left, not enough people could have run to knock us out. So then you're pretty much safe, but still, it's not over until it's over. So, yeah, we were still watching and just waiting for it to end, you know, praying for the session to end. But in the end, yeah, like I said, we were comfortably in, and we knew the second run wasn't enough because we just sneaked into 30, so that's not going to be enough. People are going to go again and try and go quicker, so we knew that. We knew we were going to run again. But, you know, no one panicked. With a couple of small changes, it improved the car a bit, gave me a bit more confidence, and we made quite a big step from the second run to the third run. So, yeah, that's what it's all about, you know, is improving every time we get in the car and go out and see where it got us, and it got us into the race.
What kind of changes did you make from that second run to third run that, you know, you went from then 31st or so all the way up to 24th?
A little bit of trim and just some damper adjustments, really.
Not major changes.
No, not major changes, but this place doesn't need major changes to make big differences. So, you know, on a normal track, that wouldn't be enough to make 2/10 difference on a lap, but here it was big. So I think it's easy to get lost in the search for more speed and to force things and to overdo it. You know, we just crept up and we may have seemed slow to start off with, but we hoped we knew what we were doing. So as it turned out, it worked. So it was a good move.
Yeah, I mean, the reaction on social media, shout out to co-host Matt, who's not here, for the hilarious mention about, you know, not being able to, trying to figure out how to tell your grandkids that Dragon Speed is faster than McLaren. Can you believe that is a real thing?
Yes and no. You know, they're on their own, like we are, and it's not easy. Yeah. It's tough, you know. I don't think you can ever, any driver in any discipline of racing, you can't just go and jump in another championship and expect to win or be at the front. And it's certainly no different here, you know. It's super tough, super tight. I mean, I ended up 27 and 1 mile an hour and we're not far off the fast nine. It's that tight, so when it is so tight, it doesn't take much and you're not in, you know, and it's so fine, them fine margins, and yeah, we got it right.
Did seeing James Hinchcliffe crash in qualifying yesterday concern you at all, make you reconsider any possible changes to the car you were making? Because I think that was right after your first attempt. Did that change anything, or you were still set with your plan?
Our plan was evolving depending on how the runs were going, so obviously we knew we were going to run again. But no, it wasn't changing. I think the the biggest thing that was the biggest variable out there yesterday was the wind. Sometimes it was constant, sometimes it was blowy, sometimes it dropped and it was still. So it was a bit of luck in that sense. If it was a constant wind, the run was easier. If it was blustery. Obviously, it was a bit more difficult. So it was just every time you went out, it was a little bit different, and it's not easy to keep on top of that. Especially, you know, we certainly weren't trimmed out as much as a lot of the other cars, but it worked for us, so we're happy with it.
Going into the race, a lot of drivers have superstitions, you know, certain things they do before every race. Is there a you know, tradition or superstition that you're going to follow before Indy 500 race morning or every race morning?
No. Hopefully I'm going to set one that I'll have to do next year. But yeah, no, not at the moment.
So the plan is for you to run after next weekend with two more races this year, I believe, maybe three more. I'm blanking off the top of my head right now. But next year, you know, there's talks of running full time, and you know, with you in the car, how much does it, you know, how much does, you know, five or six races of experience help before, you know, a full season?
Oh, huge. Massive, you know. We've been to St. Pete. We'll have been to, you know, we will have been to five races for sure, so
yeah.
It's accumulated. It's a lot of running, and these things are really tricky to get a hold of, you know, in every condition. But you know, we seem to be more competitive on the oval here than we have been on the road and street courses. But you know, that's to be expected. We weren't really ready for St. Pete. Things were arriving late, and you know, we were still missing some pieces for St. Pete. But you know, we put it together. We ran anyway because our target was to be out at St. Pete and to start getting the mileage as soon as we can. So we were more steps behind than we should have been in St. Pete and Barber, but you know, we're closing the gap, and we just got to keep working. You know, when we go back to the next one is Road America, I think so. Yeah, so when we go there, it's just a complete reset back to the road and street courses. Forget about whatever happens yeah. here. And just switch our focus to that, you know. But before then, we've got Le Mans to do. So it's busy. It's a busy time.
So you're going straight from here back overseas to do the 24-hour race.
Yeah, we have the test day the weekend. The Sunday after the race here is the official test day at Le Mans. And then, yeah, and then the team are locked in at Le Mans for a couple of weeks. And then we fly from Le Mans straight to Road America, so...
So everybody who's standing around me in the garage right now will go from here over to Europe, back to Road America, all in the span of a couple of weeks.
It's busy.
Yeah. That makes me tired just thinking about it, and I know I still have to go to Detroit right after this is all done, but at least I'm not flying across a continent. Let's wrap it up with one more question here. Again, thanks for joining me again. Race expectations. I know you have a practice... well, tentatively, you know, today, which is Sunday, maybe it will have it, maybe it won't. I don't think it will. And then Monday and carb day. So at this point, you're in full race trim, getting ready for the race. You know, what are your expectations for the race? Is it play it conservative? Is it, you know, let's get aggressive and get after it? What's the Dragon Speed mentality heading into the race?
Like it has been all year, is to finish the race. You know, we've got to be there at the end, and like I keep saying, the more laps we do, the more we're learning. So if we can do the whole race, then we're going to learn a hell of a lot than doing the first stint and maybe having an issue. But we didn't do so much traffic running the first few days. You know, a lot of the established teams were straight into traffic running and a lot of race work, and we were finding our feet, finding the balance. I was learning the track, learning the four same corners, which are completely different.
Yeah.
They're supposed to be the same, but yeah, they're not. And
it's all little slight differences.
Yeah, so
not that I'm speaking from experience.
So obviously we're a bit behind, but you know, we need, like I said, we're going to double down, focus on the race, go back to the race trim that we had the first couple of days, and try and get some more traffic running.
Do you think you'll watch any in-car camera from maybe last year's Indy 500 to get a sense of, you know, what people were doing either with their tools or, you know, just how to handle the traffic? It doesn't look like it's going to be as hot as it was last year, thankfully, but you know, will that be something, you know, as a study tool to kind of, you know, prepare you and the team even more?
I watched the race last year. Okay. you know, the Firestone have brought a slightly different tyre this year, which seems to be working well, but you know, ourselves, we're just having a little issue overworking the front right a little bit, so we need to keep working whenever we have the track time. You know, like you said, today it might be rained off, so maybe we'll lose that, but yeah, we just need to keep working a little bit to try and save that front right tyre, and hopefully that will help us even more in the traffic. I was getting a little bit more confident the test before Fast Friday, so did a little bit of traffic running there. And also, I've seen the crashes that happened on the beginning of the week, so I didn't feel that confident to jump straight into close traffic. You know, we have one car, we have one shot. This is, you know, we've got to do the best job we can, but also play a little bit safe, because there's no margin for error from our side of things. So yeah, we'll just keep building up, hopefully get some more traffic running in the next few days, and try and turn all the laps.
Well, best of luck in practice. Hope you you know, keep it in one piece, and on race weekend we hope to see you running up in the top 10 in the end.
that'd be a great result to get into that top 10.
Well, good luck, man. Thanks for joining me again this morning.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
We are joined by Jonathan Birds Racing, David Bird, and James Davison. James, congratulations on making the show, starting 16th or 15th. Yep. How does it feel, you know, versus last year, where there's a lot of stress with the crash on Fast Friday, and then, you know, the crew staying up all night working on the car, and being one of the last three, you know, cars on the grid, at least for bumping? How does it feel to not have to worry about that this year?
Well, yeah, it's just night and day different than last year, and I put it down to the team and group of people that I had behind me. You know, last year we, you know, did not have what we were promised on the equipment side, and as a result, you know, you have to go down an aggressive, risky setup path that can lead to you crashing, and that's certainly why we did come unstuck on Fast Friday last year. There's no other reason for it. And this year, you know, we just had a great group of people again, but the equipment was what we were promised, and it shows. You know, we didn't do anything different, and here we are in the middle of the pack. And yeah, it was good to just do one run and then just pull out the lounge chair and the popcorn and just watch everybody else sweat it out. At the same time, you know, since we were 13th on the grid, I didn't want to see us get bumped back to 17th, 18th, 19th, 20th, for all I knew could happen. So it wasn't a great feeling when you saw people potentially bumping you back. But you got to look big picture with it. You know, we probably could have done another run and potentially gone quicker, but what's the point of risking your whole program and effort to win the race by just trying to move up two spots or one spot, you know?
As you saw, you know, people have heavily compromised their entire Indy 500 program, whether it be not qualifying for the race, or even if they do make it, they're just, they haven't got the car speed and the equipment that they did have. So you got to look big picture with it. We were safe. We did a really good job. And yeah, it's pretty awesome for us to be 15th. I mean, believe me, that's like a win. You know, we're not a primary car on one of the big four teams. You know, we're a third car on one of the smaller teams. I mean, that was an awesome job by the whole team.
Okay, so as of right now, I know it's still a week out, but the weather conditions for race day are pretty much exactly the opposite of what we saw yesterday in qualifying. So does that make you a little bit nervous going into it, or are you feel pretty good about what you got?
Well, we've still got more practice to do, so we'll see. You know, we know that we don't have the fastest car out there, but we were very racy throughout this past week in all the practice days, and we've just got to be able to replicate that. The heat
last year wasn't all such a bad thing because it made it very difficult for people to pass, even more so. So, I mean, believe me, I had the worst car in the field in handling. I nearly crashed at turn two at the start, but I was able to hold position for 20 laps plus, you know, with holding Andretti cars behind me and so on, with a very tough car to drive, and it was just so hard to pass. So yeah, it gives you a little bit of protection, I would think, if the conditions are that poor. So whatever they're going to be, they're going to be. There's just really no point speculating on it, and we'll just take it as it comes.
David, last year was obviously, you know, very stressful. You guys were up until 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning, and I think I remember you saying that you went to the hotel to shower and then came right back. Were you able to get some rest last night?
Yeah, last night was good. It was a very happy day. I actually just kept, you know, throughout the afternoon yesterday after qualifying was wrapped, and didn't have anywhere to be, didn't have any pressure, and I just was kind of hanging around here, like just absorbing the moment. Like, you know, there's nothing to worry about right now. There's no stress. It's on to race weekend. So, yeah, long, massively different experience than last year. But over the years, we've been, you know, with my dad's program and then the ones that my brother and I have put together. We've run the gamut, and we've been, you know, crashing practice, qualify, you know, get a new car, qualify on the last day. We've been comfortably in and no drama. We've been qualifying on the front row on the pole, get knocked off the pole to second place, then get our car disqualified, then qualify the next day to set a track record. We've been in, get bumped, and then with 20 minutes left, jump in a teammate's car, do a lap and a half, to make sure the car will stick in turn three and the driver's comfortable, then go roll in qualifying line and bump our way back into the field after the gun goes off. And then there's yesterday, which was, you know, kind of a little surprising speed for second year in a row. James, you know, unleashed a monster first lap that was faster than we'd done yet. And then just was enough, even with the little fall off, enough just to give us a spot. And it was funny yesterday, you know, we knew we were in, and we knew we were comfortable.
Right.
All through. So, but then you start finding yourself getting a little greedy. Like he was saying, you know, we don't want to lose. Like, we don't want Dixon to go back out and bump us back out. We'll bump us back and Hunter Ray to go back. And I was upset with Connor for going out and bumping us back a little bit. And I'm like, dude, be cool. But, it was a different experience, you know, and just, so I just try to, you know, maintain a very even keel, an even demeanor, and it's still going to have its ups and downs. You know, today's a wash. Tomorrow should be a good practice day. Hopefully a good practice carb day, but you know, you can never afford to get too high or too low here because you just get exhausted.
With the fall off that we were seeing yesterday, are you guys worried about tire wear for the race?
I'll speak to it a little bit, then James can take over. I would say you're always worried about tire wear, but I think qualifying is such that you really rely on that right front a lot. You know, there's just no downforce on the car, and you're really relying on mechanical grip, you know, a lot. And it was consistent across everybody. So I don't think that when it comes to the Firestone tires that we have, there's any real concern about problematic wear. I think it's going to be all through practice. You know, we didn't see anything that, you know, wasn't expected. That was what I was seeing from the box, and you know, talking with the engineers and stuff. And James may have a different take on it.
Yeah, you just really got to look after your front tires, especially the right front in traffic. Everyone's struggling with understeer, especially if you're probably the third, fourth plus car back in the train that you're in. You just can't pass, and you can damage your tire quite easy by just trying to get it to do something that it's not going to do and being impatient, essentially. So yeah, you just really gotta circulate, in my opinion. After last year, look, I just want to be I'm happy being no better, no worse than anyone, just have being solid pace and just running, circulating, getting to lap 150, and then obviously, you know, the race starts getting some shape for the form guide to the end at that point. So obviously anything can happen. You know, you may not have any idea who's going to win until 5 to go, 3 to go, 2 to go. But you got to be there at that point. So at least we got track position. We're in the top half of the field. And look, we're just going to have to do our homework, maximize what we've got. And, you know, it's going to be challenging in the pits as well. You know, the guys don't work together year round and practice pit stops in the winter specifically for IndyCar like all these guys do. You know, it's just muscle memory and another day for the vast majorities of cars that will make the field. But for probably 20% of the entries or less, yeah, you've got these crews that don't have that momentum behind them and practice. So hopefully we can be solid there as well, because obviously if there's a yellow at the end and you pit, you know, and you're a little slower, you know, you can lose 5+ spots in the pit. So we'll do our best.
So some team owners have come out and said, oh, guaranteed entries are the way to go, mainly Roger Penske. Others, like Bobby Rahal and Chip Ganassi, backtracked, and you know, Trevor Carlin said it stinks, but it's the rule. Where do you guys both feel on the guaranteed versus non-guaranteed argument that seems to be taking over the social media world for the past 2 months? I'll start with James.
Well, I mean, first of all, this conversation only ever started because Hinchcliffe didn't make it last year. And he didn't make it because of mistakes that team made. You know, they didn't do their homework or have time management. They didn't know that the gun went off at 6, at 5:50. They thought it went off at 6. They didn't manage their... protect themselves in advance long enough. They waited too long. And that was their fault. So, let's look at it in black and white. Why should everybody else have to adapt to their problem that they've created? Essentially, they're wanting to make their problem become somebody else's problem. And also, correct me if I'm wrong, if there's a team, a one-off entry that makes the field by doing a really good job, they deserve to make it more than the full season teams do, because they've got all the odds against them. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, you're 100% right on that one.
Yeah.
That's why the Ben Hanleys and you guys and hopefully Junkos are such great stories around this time of year. Yeah,
exactly. And you got Mike Hull on Twitter complimenting them, and that just shows you, you know, that the top teams realize what a great job some of these one-off entries are doing. But what if their cars don't, you know, if Rosenqvist didn't make it, obviously Ganassi's not going to be tweeting that or thinking that, is he? So it's just every team has got to manage their program right. You know, with Rosenqvist, obviously, if he didn't make it, it was primarily down to the fact that he crashed, trying to go too fast too early. And that, you know, he's human, and we've all made some mistakes like that. But maybe Ganassi could have controlled that better, right? And so that's my point. It's a team sport. Everyone's got to do their part. The drivers have not got to crash their cars. And you see every driver that has crashed is fighting to make it in. All of them. Kaiser, Pato, Alonso, Hinchcliffe, and Rosenqvist to some degree, right? Like, he was in and out yesterday, right? They're not as fast as they were. And so that's the risk. And I knew during my qualifying run, I was loose, and you know, if I swapped ends and hit the wall, it was probably all over for us as well. But that's you know, I dialed a bit more understeer into the car. Maybe that cost me a little bit of time on the last lap or something, but I protected our whole big picture here, you know? And so that's what it comes down to, in my opinion.
You know, I've been on both sides of it, actually. And I'd like to think that if I was in the position where I was a full-time entrant and I you know, I wouldn't change my tune, that I think it should be, you know, open. That you have to earn your way in. There's no guarantees. But with my dad's team and our, back in the day, we were part of the Indy Racing League, you know, one of the first teams to sign on for the Indy Racing League. And, you know, there was a guaranteed spot in the 500 for the top 70, the 75% of any starting spot in every race was guaranteed to the top end points. So it was nice to have that. We never had to rely on it, but it was nice to have it. So but it was also something that was perceived as damaging to the sport, and you don't really need that. And the one thing I would say, I think it should be open. You know, even though the goal is to hopefully someday to have a full-time program, this race is obviously still special. And yes, I get the point where they say, well, it's one race in the series, and that something should be given to the guys who race full-time, that there's going to be some extra incentive to those that do the full series. Well, the one thing yes, that's fine. If there was no IndyCar series, there would still be an Indianapolis 500. Without a doubt, without fail, there's still going to be an Indy 500. If there's no Long Beach and no Toronto and no Mid-Ohio, no Road America, no Texas, none of those, all those races go away on the last Sunday in May, there's going to be an Indy 500. You don't need an IndyCar series, I don't think, to stand with that. You know, just to draw an example for short track racing, the Chili Bowl exists and gets 350 entries. The biggest midget races the rest of the year are going to get 40 entries. The Chili Bowl can stand alone on its own and gain more attention from the world than every other midget race combined throughout the rest of the season. So I think it's probably a similar analogy. On the Hinch thing that James brought up, whatever it did to that program, it didn't hurt them. As Arrow came on as the primary partner, and I realized the argument that Roger, and massive amounts of respect for Roger Penske and all he's done in racing and in business, but you know, and I understand when he says they need to protect the commercial interests of the team, protect the sponsor relationships and so on and so forth. I don't know, I don't see, and they might say it's a different era, time and era, but you know, Marlboro didn't dump Team Penske when Team Penske missed the show in 95. I don't think any of Roger's sponsors left them when they missed the show at that point in time. But sometimes there's little teams that show up here and smaller teams and one-off entries that they do miss the show. Then that sponsor that was part of them, and if doesn't show up the next year and it makes it a challenge going forward, and maybe that team never shows up again, and a little bit of what makes the 500 special gets lost. Because if you just say there's no point, then I think you will get the point where there is only 33 entries, and the race becomes filling those 8 seats or whatever, those 10 seats, with the driver from the track, and then that's going to be it, because it's just too much of a financial risk to take.
We'll wrap it up with one more question from Jess. Guys, thanks very much for some time this afternoon.
Okay, so talking about what makes the 500 special, we want to know what you guys' favorite pre-race tradition is on race day.
I would think the downtown street parade I enjoy the most. It's very iconic. I remember watching Nigel Mansell on the street parade and going through, what is it, Circle Center? And, you know, Monument Circle. And you know, it hasn't changed, obviously, that area around there. Still the same old buildings and the same historic statue and so on. And yeah, you know, you make it to the Indy 500 and all of a sudden that's you doing the same thing. And it's just, the weather's been every good has been great every year I've done that, and so it's just an enjoyable, relaxing hour, you know, where you can just see Indianapolis and all the fans and the kids and the families and so on. Yeah, enjoying a day out, you know, and it's just a very mellow, easy kind of final build up to the race prior to the race day itself. So, you know, the pre-race ceremonies or the military salutes and so on are fantastic, but from a driver's point of view, you're just really wanting to just get the race started. So awesome to watch on TV and watch a replay of the race afterwards, or
see it from the fans' point of view, but when you're on the grid and you're standing in the heat and it's just another half an hour that you just want to burn up to just get in the car and go, you know? So, I mean, there's, don't get me wrong. That's absolutely no criticism of it. It's just for all the drivers, the build-up just starts making you a little more anxious, you know? It, as calm as you can be, you just want to get in and go, you know? What do they say? Like, racing is life, everything else is waiting. Yeah. So
that's definitely accurate on that morning.
Yes, exactly.
There's kind of four things that I love and missed for a lot of years when we didn't have a program in the race, because being in the stands sucks. There's nothing. Once you've been on the pit box and involved just watching from the stands, I can't do it. But walking out through Gasoline Alley the first time about an hour before the race when the cars are on the grid and just being swallowed up by the spectacle of the people for the first time. It's fantastic. I can't recall if it's always happened, but this is my 34th 500 I've been to. And I don't know if they've always done it, but I really enjoy the parade of soldiers or, you know, service members on the front. I can't say soldier because that's Army. Got to say service members because that encompasses everybody. the parade of service members that are down, that come from the end of pit lane and down the pit, and everybody stops and takes a moment and acknowledges all of them as they pass by. I really enjoy that. Taps is the tingles, and just really just gets the goosebumps with Taps. And then of course I'm born and bred in Indiana, so it's back home again is always the moment when it's, I got something in my eye, you know.
sunglasses on a little bit tighter.
Yeah, and then after back home again, then it's just everything starts to build, because you know it's all coming rapidly at that point, and it's just the final, you know. James is in the car at that point, and it's the radio checks and the check in with the spotters and the final, you know, check of all the stuff in the dials. I mean, but it's back home again that signals that it's all happening, and it's going to start just clicking off, and that you're going to 500 miles are going to run faster than you can even think about. It's going to be over, and it's back home again is obviously it's trite, I think, but it's back home again is the number one thing.
Well, gentlemen, thank you very much for some time on a rainy Sunday. Best of luck next weekend. We'll be rooting for you guys, and hopefully we see you in at least the top 10. I'm hoping for a podium out of you guys.
That'd be amazing. Thanks.
We are joined by Santino Ferrucci the day after qualifying weekend. And, Santino, you qualified 21st, so 23rd. So congratulations on not having to worry about anything yesterday. Describe Saturday, the emotions, what went through your head all day?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where you're happy that it's over with, you know, and you're happy you're not one of those people that has to pack up and go home. And, you know, I was also happy not to have to go out and run the car again, because it was quite frightening. So, no, I'm just very thankful that we're in the race. You know, we get to run in the 103rd running in the 500. There's nothing better than that.
All right, what are your emotions coming into race week, and are you nervous? Are you excited? What are you feeling?
I'm still kind of waiting for it to sink in, the fact that I'm going to run in 7 days or 6 days. No, I don't even know what to think. I'm just happy that I'm here, you know. I'm just going to take it day by day, and when we get there, we get there. But I just want to complete all 200 laps. So
you've got practice coming up today. In about an hour and a half from our recording, there's obviously carb day practice. What are your goals for practice? You know, strict race setup? Are you doing long runs, short runs, a whole checklist of things?
It's probably going to be a full fuel long run. And to be honest with you, we're probably going to just sit in the back of the longest pack and try and make our car perfect, so when we do come to race day and we got to pass 22 cars, we can do it.
I like it. So on that note, we've heard different opinions from pretty much everybody. I don't know how much pack running you were able to do last week, but do you feel confident, you know, in the, you know, I know you don't remember the Firestone tire from last year at the 500 because you weren't here, but you feel confident that you can make up a lot of ground?
Yeah, I'm pretty confident in our car. I mean, I think that's been our strong suit all week. Is we've been able to pass. Like, we've been able to just rip through fields, and, you know, our qualifying car was kind of, you know, at that point, it just is what it is. I mean, there's nothing you can really do. And you know, we were really skating and qualifying. That's why I'm kind of glad it's over, because you don't want, you know, going through turn two sideways isn't really fun at 230. But, you know, I'm happy to be back in with downforce, and I think we'll be able to pass a few people, and the race will be really good for us.
All right, everybody knows about all the traditions that lead up to the 500. What one are you looking forward to experiencing firsthand most?
Probably the rookie luncheon tomorrow, just because I was actually literally looking back through the speeds today, and it was really cool because today's Tony Stewart's birthday, and he's a friend of mine, and it's kind of funny. He's still got the fastest speed, 233. So, no, it's pretty funny. I just texted my friend Eddie, who's Tony's right-hand guy, to wish him happy birthday for me because, you know, he's always traveling and whatnot, and I didn't want to bother him too much. But, no, I'm looking forward to that. You get to sit down where, you know, other great people have, and Rick Mears and Vassar, you know, Dixon, Kanaan, and, you know, you get to go through that. So it's going to be fun.
So let's talk a little bit about Bump Day. I'm sure you probably watched at least a little bit of it. How awesome is it for a little team like Juncos Racing to bump out the big dog, quote-unquote big dog in McLaren, you know, coming from a smaller team like Coyne Racing?
No, I mean, I'm so happy to see Kaiser make it through, especially in the end there. I mean, I know Ricardo from go-karting, you know, but it also goes to show you that, you know, you can't come here and not be prepared. And you have to be on your top game. I mean, this is no little children's playground. I mean, this is a big race. This is, you know, everyone brings out the best of the best here. And just if you don't have what it takes, you can't make it in. I mean, it just goes to show, I mean, how hard we prepare. I mean, our cars are all really quick. And, you know, I know the Carpenter cars are really quick. Other people are really quick. And you prepare so much for this whole month. I mean, it's almost sad to think that it's over in a week. But, yeah, you really need to have it together.
Okay, so on that same note, then, do you have an opinion on the locked-in entries that have been being talked about?
Quite frankly, I think it takes away from the fun of it. Because after going through qualifying, I mean, you're like, ah, man, you know, two full-time drivers didn't make it through. Yeah. And you're like, oh, I mean, was it just preparation or what was it? And, I think the fact that you had the other teams that come in and do this once a year that deserve their spot. I mean, it's one, it's tradition, and two, I mean, what's the fun in knowing the fact that you are going to make it? You know, I think it's cool that you have to qualify.
Plus, it gives us a lot to talk about after qualifying. So you've got a couple off days coming up. I'm sure you have some media responsibilities in some other city. Are you going to get some, extra sleep, any sort of pre-race tradition or superstition that you need to check off your checklist before we get to Sunday?
Well, I've been playing a lot of Need for Speed lately. So I was just playing last night. I got a couple of new cars in the stable, having a lot of fun building up my Nissan 240Z.
Okay.
So, no, it's to be honest with you, I'm kind of happy I'm in my home and I have video games, because I feel like I'm back at home, kind of.
Yeah.
You know, it's not something like in Europe I'm used to doing. Like, I'm not used to just going back and basically, like, hanging out on a couch, you know, eating cereal for dinner. But it's nice. I mean, I'm just been so much more relaxed than I ever thought I would be. And, you know, just keep going with that routine. You know, it's gotten us this far, so.
All right. What's your pump-up song going to be right before you get in the car on Sunday?
The good old favorite, Why You Always Hatin'. So that's gonna be the song right there. So no, I can't, can never go wrong. So that or some 90s.
All right, respect. You know, you've got two experienced teammates in your garage. What kind of pre-race advice have they given you already? You know, I know you've probably talked to them all week, but is there any extra pre-race advice that you can divulge that they've kind of led you in on?
It's 500 miles. So the idea is to stay clean for 160 laps. You know, your last 40 laps are where it counts. So, you know, a lot of my advice was more leading up to qualifying so far. You know, I have a lot of time to sit down with Seb and James and work it out and, you know, kind of get an understanding. I have Pancho, who's sitting there, is going to tell me a lot of what I need to do and look out for. So, so far the advice from both my vet drivers has been really good, especially Seb. So can't complain.
So, speaking of James Davison, we interviewed him. Probably when you're listening to this, it'll be about in the middle of the episode. But what's it like to be around James Davison, who goes out there like a badass? You know, this is the only race of the year, and he qualifies 15th.
Oh, it's cool. I mean, he's an awesome dude. I'm glad he's part of our team, and I met him. A couple times in passing, but I actually got like a proper introduction in St. Pete, and I was really glad he's on board because, you know, he's kind of something that, you know, Seb's really conservative. I'm just a little nuts, and James is kind of like that cool dude that, you know, I think our little gang was missing. So I'm happy he's with us.
It covers all ends of the spectrum.
So speaking of being a little nuts, we've seen some pretty insane passes from you this season. Can we expect more of that this weekend?
Probably not until the first 160 laps are over, but my non doesn't think I'm crazy, so that's where the nuts comes in. And you know, she drives like an absolute, you know, foot down, pedal to the metal. She's 90 years old, doesn't lift, doing 65 down Main Street. Got that on video. But I think I'll be pretty conservative to start this race, just because it's so long. I mean, it's not like the IndyGP course where you start and you need to immediately start moving through the field. But, definitely towards the end, if we're getting up there, I'll pull out a couple stops to see how much further up the field we can get. And I'd like to be in the top 10, so that's the goal.
Definitely think it's possible with how you've been running for the most part so far this year. Wrap it up with one more question here so you can prepare for Monday practice. There's been the weather report for Sunday has changed 87 times every day I look at it. Are you hoping for a hot day like qualifying? Are you hoping for a little bit more of a colder day like it is today in the mid-60s? What is your ideal temperature scenario come race day?
Let's just say I hope the weatherman's wrong like he always is, because it's the only job you can't get fired from. No, the hotter the better. I think our car in 125 degree track temp is at its best, where a lot of people struggle with understeer. And so, you know, I'm praying for a super, super hot, long, sweaty race day as opposed to a little cool day. It just takes, you know, just it'll help us out big time, I think.
Cool. Well, thanks very much for joining us. Best of luck this weekend, man. We look forward to rooting for you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.